Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Social podcast. Distanced.
What antiques were we talking about this week?
I decided to forego a more traditional, I guess, opportunity to talk about this and talk about lockets.
Lockets?
Yeah, by the time I was done reading, I was like, well, that would have been good to do around, like, Valentine's Day or... like the death of Queen Victoria, just to celebrate a little. But no, I just felt like doing it today, so you'll deal with that. Lockets.
Lockets.
Do you know what a locket is?
It is a necklace charm that opens to reveal a picture.
Correct.
I did it. I've won antiques.
Well, mostly correct. It's not always specifically a picture.
Oh.
Wikipedia defines it as a pendant that opens to reveal space to place a photo, hair, or any other tiny memento, usually of a person. The history of the locket is unknown. The end. It's actually...
So the history of the locket is obscure?
Yeah, I mean, as with most things that are jewelry, because jewelry has existed for a very, very long time. It's most popularly kind of associated with the medieval era and the practice of wearing amulets. An amulet was any kind of necklace, usually a necklace, it could be anything, that you wore that was either inscribed with some kind of spell or symbol that was meant to protect you.
Like an ancestor amulet that you could use to summon a ghost to fight on your behalf.
Yeah, like that very real thing that happened in real life.
Yes, the real life known as Morrowind, absolutely.
Yeah, my real life, which happened in Morrowind. As my parents will tell you. Yeah, actually, it is pretty similar to that, though. They would be either, like, a religious figure or a magic spell or a folk thing, like a folk hero that would invoke, like, protection. A lot of it was basically protection, and amulets also were sometimes hollowed out so that they could carry medicines or other magical goods.
Oh.
And popularly, of course, poison, although I have gone my whole life without seeing, like, I have yet to encounter, like, a confirmed poison in a locket sighting.
Oh man, if only though. That would fit so well into your poison bottle collection.
Oh god, easily. So this day, I am actually like a little suspicious that the poison ring is a myth.
What?
And never had any practical existence.
Oh, my dreams. My hopes and dreams.
I know, it would be nice. From this, you also get lockets, which were just little necklaces, that Hill had little lumps of cloth in them that you'd soak with perfume, because for a very long time, everything stank really bad. And kind of like putting a little peppermint oil in your face mask before you go to the Walmart.
It does nothing?
You could just take a little... It smells like peppermint, Ken.
Oh, okay. I thought we were going on an essential oils tangent and I was about to have a problem.
No, I was just going on the, like, I don't know, sometimes the medical masks, like the paper disposable ones, they smell weird. I think it's the charcoal.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I dabble a little perfume so it smells nicer in there from a snooter.
Gotcha. Okay. But you're not trying to protect yourself from the miasma.
No, I wasn't trying to get the ghosts out.
Okay.
And thus keep me healthy. Yeah, no, so that, like, those existed because, you know, you wouldn't bathe, so if you had a little locket full of perfume, people might not notice that you didn't bathe so often.
I guess?
Yeah, exactly. Listen, that we have historical evidence of.
Okay.
So a locket wasn't just a necklace. It could also be a bracelet charm or a pin.
Perhaps even a brooch?
Perhaps a brooch, if you would.
Bring back the brooch.
Like, there's no hard line on when they started to just become mementos of people. Like all things, it started with the upper class once they could afford to bathe and they didn't need to have their de-stank amulet on. Very popularly, it is associated to Queen Elizabeth I. She had a little ring that popped open to show a sculpted and painted portrait of her and her mother, Anne Boleyn.
Oh.
And so the Elizabethans actually kind of went nuts for lockets. Europe has, like, a bad habit of just sort of, like, copycatting their regents. It didn't go well, but hey.
No.
And speaking of things not going well with your regent of choice, another interesting history of the locket includes mourners in 1649 who had secret locket rings made with a portrait of Charles I after his execution.
Aww. They really missed his head.
They did. Mythically, some of them had claimed to have his dead-ass hair pulled off his severed head, which is grotesque. but interesting.
That's a fun memento for the kids.
You know, just little dead hair. Whatevs. Whatevs. It's normal.
Just cool normal things.
Okay, I actually had no idea about this. Strengthening sort of the association between lockets and mementos of loved ones. There was one particular place called the Foundling Hospital that was dedicated to caring for foundling babies.
Which are honestly just babies you kind of find lying around somewhere.
Yes, but kind of like Baby Safe Haven, the Foundling Hospital allowed women to drop off the babies without, as was the custom at the time, a lot of exacting and potentially very dangerous information. They had to give their full name, address, living family members, so on and so forth, and that could be used to identify them. And if you were a fallen, unmarried woman, that could ruin everything.
Yeah.
And so the Foundling Hospital, they didn't want to have to submit women to this rigorous questioning, but they needed a kind of baby redemption system in case the women came back.
Like a coat check ticket, but for babies?
Precisely like a coat check ticket, but for babies.
Wait. Are you fucking telling me that the Little Orphan Annie Locket subplot is based on a factual phenomenon?
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it is drawn from a real period of history. So what they would do is, well, at the time, abandoning a child was a weird thing because I would say almost as often as you just left them there and left them there forever, there were people who would sometimes find a way to come into money and come back and get the kid.
Yeah.
So it would be weird now to give someone a chit and say, if you change your mind, come grab it. it was not weird at the time. So what they would do is they would clip a square of the baby's clothing upon admittance and paste one piece into the baby's intake papers and give the other to the mother. So if she ever wanted to reclaim her coat, I mean baby, she would just have to present that fabric and have it matched to the baby's intake paper.
Oh my god.
So that you couldn't just come in and steal babies. they were also encouraged to make it easier and make the association stronger by leaving a trinket with the child that they'd be able to recognize in some way. And legendarily, some women took the fabric of the chit fabric and put it in a locket for them and a locket for the baby so that they could come and get their kid later.
What?
Yep. Or oftentimes they would just leave little jewelry with the child. They would take some sort of important document, tear it in half so that the kid could come find them again with it later. So on and so on. It's a coat redemption system. There's really no prettying it up.
But for babies.
Yeah. It's a baby redemption system.
Incredible.
It doesn't seem to be very, like, well known, but I think it probably has a lot to do with the association of lockets to, like, tragedy and loss as well as love.
Okay.
Because it paints a really sad picture, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, like, as Little Orphan Annie proved.
Yes. As the documentary Little Orphan Annie proved through rigorous scientific experiments.
It was so sad when she was eaten alive by all those wolves.
What?
Yeah, well, that happened after what happened in the biopic.
What?
I'm joking. There's probably someone out there who's like doesn't care about Little Orphan Annie and thinks I'm being serious, and there's an actual kid that got eaten by wolves.
I mean,
there is, but we're not going to talk about that.
I mean, that does tend to happen when you get wolves and babies together, but, you know.
Yeah. So, another thing that lockets are really closely entwined with is the existence of an entire subcategory of fine art, which is the miniature painter.
Ooh.
So, a very common thing to have in a locket is a picture of someone you care about. Usually the person who gave you the locket as a sort of token. But how did you get a picture of someone in the Elizabethan era? Only one way. Gotta paint it. And painting in miniature, as anyone who has hands and eyes and could put them together really quick to figure it out, could tell you that painting in miniature is really hard.
Art difficult, actually.
And when I say subcategory, miniature painting actually is its own whole school of art. There were many painters who were only ever famed for their miniatures.
Like, y'all remember our Chinese snuff bottles episode?
Yeah.
With the tiny paintings inside of bottles?
Yep.
Tiny paintings outside of bottles, still very hard.
A little easier, but still pretty hard.
Still pretty difficult.
I think my fondest thought of lockets actually is this connection to miniature paintings. I actually got to see an exhibit of miniature paintings once. And it's bonkers for yonkers. Holy shit.
Yeah?
I think when you hear the word miniature, your brain, like, automatically sizes it up to something you can comprehend. But when you see, like, I want you to really think about the size of a locket and then realize that they painted at that scale, a photo exact replica.
So imagine you're hand painting a photo replica the size of your human thumbnail.
Exactly. It's grounding, you know?
Yeah.
So, lockets. Everyone likes them, but they're really a rich person thing right now because of the costs associated with jewelry in general being made of fine metals, and having to hire a miniature painter is not cheap. Enter the Victorian era, as we so often do. Ken, now could you tell me one thing that happened during the Victorian era that might have led to certain things becoming cheaper?
Oh, a little thing called the invention of photography?
The invention of photography.
And specifically the technologies that allowed photography to be mass-produced?
Specifically what he said. throw in the onset of the Industrial Revolution, allowing lots of things to be mass-produced, and you've got a kettle a-boiling. And the fire underneath this kettle is, as it so often was, Queen Victoria.
God, she really did have her greedy little fingers in everything, didn't she?
There is so much to blame on her. We could do an entire podcast just blaming her for stuff. I think this might actually be it. I don't know.
Contribute to our Patreon and get us closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. Give us the excuse we need to slag on Victoria for entire podcast episodes.
So, one of the things Queen Victoria was best known for, although it should have been the genocide, the elimination of native peoples, and the heartless conquest of lands that did not belong to her, was her sweeping romance of Prince Albert.
Oh, yes. You marry one German and then you don't let anyone forget it.
Never let anyone forget that you married a goofy-looking German. But their romance really captured the hearts and minds of everyone, including today. And one of Prince Albert's big gestures to Victoria was a...
piercing?
Yeah. Yeah, several, actually. I can't imagine how tacky this must have looked. It was a bracelet with 8 separate locket charms, each one with a lock of their children's hair. They had 8 kids. Just trying to picture it, it seems ugly, but...
that must have jangled like a son bitch.
Rattled like a an earthquake in a graveyard. When Albert famously died, possibly one of the better things he could have done with his time.
Jesus Christy.
What? He's culpable. She had a custom jet locket made that she wore until her own death. Very famously, Victoria's mourning of Albert became a very strict set of social codes regarding mourning in general. And her use of lockets both as a lovely gesture of a doting husband for their children and also an eternal memento of a lost love as she never remarried, the Victorians went abso-fucking-lutely insane for lockets, holy shit. And since hair was already kind of, I also didn't know about this beforehand, the Victorians specialized in a clear glass locket to show off hair.
Yeah. Hair jewelry and hair keepsakes.
Yeah, that makes more sense when I started thinking, of course, because if you're working so hard on hair jewelry, you want to show off that you did that. Except I found a number of examples that were just regular hair, which seems strange because you are just boasting that you think someone's neat.
But you're also displaying and protecting the hair with the glass.
Here comes Ken with the empathy I don't have for this. I just thought it was neat. I didn't know that they existed. Now I will be looking out for them. Over time, lockets became progressively cheaper and cheaper and more accessible as photography became easier and they started making lockets out of non-precious metals, jewelry in general out of non-precious metals. Lockets, depressingly, took off in America during, can you guess when, Ken?
Oh, when?
Well, that would be the Civil War.
That one.
Yeah, the Civil War had coincided with the ease and accessibility of modern photography. Someone referred to it as a charming token of pre-mourning, which struck me as especially ghoulish? A ghoulish thing?
Well, he's going away for a while and there's no guarantee he's coming back, so...
But yeah, these were obviously mementos for people to be able to remember their children, family members that went off to the Civil War, of which a horrifying number did not come back. They overtook mourning rings as the popular form of mourning jewelry around 1860. Don't know why. And they only continued to become more popular in America as we continued engaging in horrible wars, to the point where, by World War II, you could get a cheap locket at the post office to send a picture of yourself to whoever you were leaving behind.
That's very ghoulish, but I am wondering, you said that rings fell out of favor when lockets arose throughout the 19th century, and I'm wondering if it has anything to do with the hazards of wearing a ring in a factory pre-OSHA?
That's a really good question. I want to know that now.
But now I'm thinking about it, and I don't know that a necklace would be much safer.
It wasn't. It wasn't much safer. I guess it depends on what job you had.
And I guess most of the people in the jewelry buying category don't really have jobs.
That's true.
Anyway, post office locket. That's certainly something.
I find it extremely grim. I don't want to say surprise is the wrong word, but I guess an unpleasant awakening to the fact that this era is actually probably the touchstone for a lot of people's thoughts about lockets. The locket as a symbol of a separated love and like this big sweeping love that conquers all, especially romantic love. It kind of comes from this World War II, because everyone had sweetheart jewelry.
Oh.
You know, by World War II, they were specifically making sweetheart jewelry that would be like the... I'm forgetting my military terms. That's so shameful. But, you know, if he were in the Royal Air Force, you would actually have a little locket with a heart that said RAF. And this is where you start seeing it in, you know, popular media, pop culture, necklace, with the little photo of the person you can't be with for whatever reason, you know?
Yeah.
So this is, like, really the touchstone. I don't know why it wasn't the beheaded king, because that would have been my pick.
I think it might not have been the beheaded king, because in the beheaded king era, we didn't have, like, the mass production of lockets. They were still exclusively for the wealthy, whereas they became more of a mass-produced middle-class phenomenon by the mid-20th century.
That's true. But in my perfect world, that's what everyone would remember them for.
You just love remembering dead kings.
And? So here the history of the locket more or less fades into a gentle retirement. People, of course, still wear lockets, but I think they're seen as a novelty now.
I would almost say that they're seen as kind of childish. Like, it's very much a little girl thing to have a locket.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's very much like a baby's first piece of grown-up jewelry.
I do wonder how it made that leap culturally.
Yeah.
I'm assuming because children want to imitate their elders, and the simplest way to do that is to give a kid a locket.
Yeah, but how it managed to maintain despite the fact that adults stopped wearing lockets is a good question. But either way, lockets are, full stop, one of my favorite things to shop for when I'm out and about, because as we've demonstrated, it is so intrinsically personal that the existence of a locket becomes a history of the person who owned it.
Oh, that's a very good point.
And that is very heady, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think anyone who may have found a vintage locket and saw the photos inside has had that moment where they go, oh, I wish I could know who you were to this person.
Yes, the mystery.
And the fact that lockets are little secrets that you kept for yourself unless you were a Victorian with a glass one. The thing is, I find whenever I buy a lot of jewelry, like, you know, a box lot, I always get one locket.
Just one.
Yeah, no, it's like when they guarantee a holo in every pack. For, like, my life has always been, like, guaranteed a locket in every box. If you're interested in collecting lockets, good news, there's a lot. Depending on the time range you're interested in, and this is one where I find most people are not. They kind of just want interesting lockets that are neat and pretty to look at. But the price will be affected by age. They're actually pretty easy to date because most of the ones that were precious metals were stamped in some way, shape, or form, and their designs so strongly reflect the time period that if you are even basically aware of them, you could kind of pinpoint it. It gets a little tricky with 1950s lockets because they started copying the Victorian ones an awful lot.
Uh-oh.
But that's easy because most of the Victorian ones were made with actual precious metals, so once you solve that problem, you're good. Yeah, I don't know, it's hard to talk about, like, what's desirable in a locket. It's so subjective. Do you want to talk about rarity? Obviously, anything that's made out of gold or silver or encrusted with precious gems, I feel like I don't have to tell you. Those are very valuable, and if you find one for a good price, you should buy it. Mourning lockets are through the roof, alongside, you know, pretty much everything else that got featured on TV as an oddity. Remember, please remember, it is not a mourning locket unless it has a symbol of death of some sort. Hair is not enough to call something a mourning piece.
Remember, hair can be taken from alive people.
Hair can be cherished from alive people. It is a mourning locket when it is combined with either it's made out of an unusual black material, black glass, bog oak, vulcanite jet, and or it has a motif that is indicative of death. I have seen one that I would love to own someday that was bog oak carved in a little bouquet of wilting flowers.
Aww.
So if you see something like that, or the classic urn, weeping willow with the urn, finger pointing up, it's not my favorite, but there it is. These will all be indications that what you're looking at is a mourning locket, not just the existence of hair or a person. If you see a person, they're not dead yet. Hold on. It's a wonderful mourning human you've got. I think it's dead.
I feel like I could accurately be described as a mourning human, but that's more of a fashion statement than anything else.
Well, yeah. Other interesting things is that usually a locket has two places to put stuff. Some lockets get really creative with this and have an unusual number of leaves. There's actually a style of locket called a book locket, which, guess what it looks like? A book. And it opens to have pages to have multiple pictures.
I love it. I feel like Queen Victoria could have used that as an alternative to her jangly keychain of infinite children.
Yeah, her strapping a flail to her arm. I don't know, was it meant to, like, intimidate all eight of those said children?
Oh, yeah, whoever they're misbehaving, you just rattle it at them.
Yeah, Mama's clacking it against her hip, going, you better behave.
Like shaking a can of pennies at a dog.
I'm gonna invade you.
Dino.
I actually have one. It is one of my favorites. It's definitely, like, I would say 40s. It actually has an unfolding. When you unclip it, it spring loads open to reveal 8 pockets for pictures.
Oh.
It is the neatest thing. I probably will be selling on the Etsy eventually. It's just so charming.
Do you mean on Etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks?
The very same, Ken.
I am excited.
So pretty much any interesting and charming variants, number of leaves, any shape other than round or oval pretty much, or, you know, later on hearts became pretty common. But then there's a lot of different shapes. There were a lot of custom shapes. People are really fond of the book ones for obvious reasons. But you see, like, shamrocks, stars. I don't know why I felt the need to explain what a shape was to you, and now I regret having done it.
Listen. You need shapes explained? We got you.
We're here for you. It's almost entirely up to taste. Just, you know, you gotta buy what moves you when it comes to lockets. And they come in a really startling array of prices, usually pretty directly linked to whatever they're made out of, which means you can get a really pretty, charming locket that has a lovely picture in it for peanuts if it's, you know, made out of brass.
Dang.
And its value obviously has a baseline of what it's made out of, isn't strictly determined by that. Obviously, if it's got some uniqueness or an interesting history, it's going to be valuable because lockets are defined by their history. One thing you definitely want to check if you are lucky enough to be shopping in person, which I hope you're not right now, but someday we will all be able to, is to check the mechanism and make sure it locks fairly tightly. This is for a number of reasons, not just because condition affects value, but because if it's too loose and starts, like, slapping open whenever and you intend to wear it, it's eventually going to ruin the hinge.
Oh no.
If you're not interested in fixing the lock mechanism, you can actually just grab a safety chain that'll keep it from shutting, opening too hard. Or you can, fixing the locket, the locks isn't that hard. It's usually just a little piece of metal that needs to be resoldered.
All right.
As with all antiques, if something is in need of repair, just kind of ask yourself how important that repair is to you, how difficult it's going to be, and if it's going to cost more than the item itself. With lockets, you actually see people looking into repairing the enamel a lot. Very personally, everyone will probably argue with me on this one, that's fine. I do not see the need to repair enamels. They are soft, they become damaged with time, it is just sort of a character trait to me. That being said, missing gems might be a bigger turnoff, because they weren't supposed to come out. but then again, that also still depends, because those can be very cheap to replace if they were just glass. Or even just like a faceted glass, like a marcasite, would be easy to replace, obviously, than a diamond.
Yes.
And just make sure you clean and tighten the hinge if you're going to wear it regularly. Tightening the hinge, it sounds intimidating, but if you can just get a hold of jewelry screws, a jewelry screwdriver, a little jewelry toolkit, Very easy, just same as eyeglasses, just give it a squeak squeak, and so it tightens up.
Sounds good.
What's your favorite kind of locket, Ken?
The one we saw on Songbird Sarah Jewelry's site.
Oh, that one was a very good locket.
It was a, I want to say, Victorian Etruscan Revival brooch that opened up to reveal a photo of a family that looked to be original to the piece at the time of its construction. And it was so beautiful. And if it's still on her site, you should all go, like, all throw it in your carts at the same time and compete to who can hit the checkout faster, because God, it's a beautiful piece. If you haven't heard our guest episode with Songbird Sarah, you really oughta, because damn, did she pick out some good jewelry.
Yeah, if you want to talk more about sentimentality and history carried through jewelry and antiques, please, it's a wonderful episode for that.
And she's a fantastic guest.
And she's a wonderful guest. She's equal parts entertaining and educational. And it was a delight to talk to her.
As we aspire to be.
I hope we're even a fraction as cool to talk to her as she is.
But yeah, that is my new benchmark for locket beauty and just general enjoyment.
It's hard to beat that one.
Do you have a favorite locket?
Actually, I do have a favorite locket. And to this day, if anyone has any information on this one, I've actually had a really hard time. I got it for $40. It is a little black and sterling silver enameled coffin. It was sold to me as a rare English memento of the death of the Queen Mum. Of course, if it's a memento of the death of the Queen Mum, it's not all that rare. There were many, many different things made for that.
Yeah, it's like having a rare commemorative plate of Harry and Meghan Markle's wedding. But
exactly. But it is still really charming, and as far as I can tell, it does follow the age. And I actually had a really hard time finding anything that matched it. If this doesn't give it away, the enamel is chipped on it. I've never once considered fixing it because, like I said, I think it's part of the character. But I absolutely love it. Someday I'll actually get around to having a silversmith fix the chain, because the chain is very unique to it, actually.
Man, that sounds absolutely delightful.
It absolutely launched my interest in lockets and why I love them so much.
Can you post pics?
Can you post pics of it?
Okay.
I will. You'll all forgive me because I haven't polished it, and I probably won't until I get it fixed, but...
I want to see
it. But it's my favorite, and I love it. I think it was my first baby goth purchase.
Aww.
I was like 15, and I had my own money, and it was like, I'm going to be a goth now. I looked at this coffin necklace.
You had your own money from working at an antique store.
And I used it to buy antiques. Surprise.
And if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about Dee, then what would?
That's the only way to get to know me, really.
Oh, man.
Your sources for today include, first and foremost, MorningGloryJewelry.com, their article dating vintage lockets. I recommend it because it has a lot of pretty pictures of neat lockets and you'll enjoy it.
Yay!
Also, JewelryLoveToKnow.com, antique silver chain lockets, RomanticHomes.com, collecting antique lockets, CollectorsWeekly.com, fine jewelry, lockets, WithYouLockets.com, they have a delightful history of lockets, please check it out, ArtFund.org, The Fallen Woman, The History of the Locket, and Wikipedia.
Blessed Wikipedia.
Donate.
If you would like to show us your favorite lockets, you can email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends. Or message us on Tumblr at antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com, or check out our subreddit, reddit.com/r/antiquesfreaks.
If you liked the words that we spoke from our human mouths today, or if you want to comment on why I said that in such a weird fashion, scroll on down to your podcast app or wherever you're listening to this from and leave us a rating, won't you? 0 out of 10. One of the hosts sounds like they don't know how to talk to people.
Just one?
-1 out of 10. Both of the hosts sound like they don't know how to talk to people.
But we do know how to talk to each other, which is really all you need for a podcast.
It's literally the only thing you need.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes and support the podcast, you can head on over to Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And your donation will not only pay for our hosting fees, but will get us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes.
Where we talk about how much we hate the legacy of Queen Victoria.
Special shout out to our current patrons for filling our hearts with love. And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.